A very busy show Thursday, April 8th, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today. Southern Connecticut State University political science professor Dr. Jonathan Wharton joined us in the 3 o'clock hour to talk about the continued delay Connecticut is experiencing in passing a bill that would legalize recreational marijuana for adults. We got the latest from Governor Ned Lamont in the 4 o'clock hour regarding the state's battle against COVID-19. And to kick off the 5 o'clock hour, Fairfield's Alexis Harrison joined us. She's a longtime active person in local Fairfield politics and zoning, and she talked about a rally coming up in a couple of days to protest a push by majority Democrats to bigfoot some zoning laws and regulations in many towns. Many of those targeted towns are in Fairfield County. And we continue on Connecticut Today right here on WICC 600 on the radio and online at WICC600.com. One of our go-to guys coming up next, he has authored one of his great columns, as he usually does, for the Connecticut News Junkie. Like I say, go to that site numerous times a day. You'll get a lot of info, ctnewsjunkie.com. Here's the headline that caught my eye right away. New York legalizes, Massachusetts profits, and Connecticut is late to cannabis legalization. Dr. Jonathan Wharton joins us, Associate Dean of the School of Graduate and Professional Studies and a poli-sci professor at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. John, Paul here again. Good to have you on. How are you?
Thanks for having me on, Paul. I appreciate it.
John, are we about to blow it here? Is this what you're saying in the land of rock-solid New England steady habits? What's your point in the op-ed here?
Well, you know, there's no doubt the pressure's on. Between the surrounding states of New York, New Jersey not being too far, and of course Massachusetts has already been doing marijuana legalization for recreational purposes. So it's not a matter of if, it's more a matter of when and how. And that's the biggest concern I have in there, is how.
And John, that comes up, I'm glad you started with that, because that comes up with a lot of callers I take on this show, a lot of politicos on both sides of the aisle who I have on the show here on a regular basis. There seems to be, John, as you and I can tell from what we know of the details here, there's a lot of minutiae here. I think, John, the general populace says, well, okay, the times, they are changing, you know, to quote Bob Dylan, but how do we do this? And there's the whole equity part of this, and how much can you grow, and what about law enforcement? Do you think the General Assembly might be on the verge of raising the white flag again, maybe, and waiting to another session, or not?
That's something that I've been curious as to, because the timing of this is so important, especially since New York announced it and they're expunging people who've been convicted prior. And that could be certainly on the table, as well as one big thing I think you already know is whether you could grow this in, you know, illegally in the back of your yard, for example,
yeah.
Right? Because certainly there have been provisions of that in other states. I don't think Connecticut's going to go that far, but I think, you know, one of the bills that they're considering is that wherever the cannabis dispensaries are for medical purposes could be the same way for recreational purposes. So that's something that's interesting with all these proposals that are out there. Of course, I stress more the tax revenue that, you know, a lot of these politicians are stressing, oh, this will help us out financially in so many ways. Well, it will, but it won't, because it's really more of something more temporary than I'm more concerned about, just like it was with the taxes on casinos and certainly taxes on cigarettes, right? We're seeing a drop-off effect over the years of this. So even if they're going to do this the way Massachusetts and New York is doing it, I don't think it's going to be nearly as much money as they're thinking here, especially for the long term.
And John, you and I both know that, yes, an increased revenue flow is nice if you don't take that money and act like a bunch of sailors on weekend leave here. I mean, you know, like our parents used to say, okay, you made a little extra money, don't go blowing it all, put it in the bank, save it for a rainy day. And I think maybe that's what you mean by your previous answer, that, yeah, the increased revenue is nice, but how does that translate into long-term, better, more solid fiscal health?
Especially when we know our state of economy here is pretty lackluster, right? It's been that way for years, and certainly the pandemic has not helped. So this is not a magic bullet, as I stressed there in the op-ed. And I think that's the thing, is I would hope that our politicians, our public officials, won't just seize on this because of the pressure, but also recognize that, hey, we have a state economy to grow here.
Dr. Jonathan Wharton is the guest, Southern Connecticut State University. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more from John, more of our discussion about his op-ed and marijuana legalization, which, if it happens, folks, would be a huge sea change in Connecticut policy, probably the biggest one, you could say, since the state income tax. First, though, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Back with you on a Thursday, Connecticut Today, right here on WICC 600 on the radio and online at WICC600.com. Dr. Jonathan Wharton, Ph.D., Associate Dean of the School of Graduate and Professional Studies, Poli-Sci Professor at Southern Connecticut State University. Talking with us, he's a regular contributor to CTNewsJunkie.com, writing an op-ed that a lot of people are circulating and talking about a couple of days ago regarding, is the state of Connecticut going to still be slow on the uptake here to marijuana, legalize recreational pot sales. John, you touched on taxes, and I continue to see, as you say, looking back at what Massachusetts has done now for 2 years, even in California, there really is a sweet spot on taxes here, John, because my fear is, and I'm hearing this from some legislators too, if we overtax this stuff, you know, that so-called black market, the guy or the gal who's already always been selling to you or to me or whoever buys, they're not going to go away, because if you overtax this stuff, right, John, you are going to, I think, maintain a black market.
That, and we can't forget just the capital, you know, just the capitalism market here in the region, right? Because the competition coming from New York and New Jersey is going to be pretty significant. We already know the competition in Massachusetts is robust, and we can't ignore Rhode Island and all of this. So we're surrounded by this, whether it's the black market or the actual market at the state level. And that's why these tax levels are going to be interesting, by the way, not just from the state, but also even the local level, too. We can't ignore that part of it either, Paul.
Sure. John, let's talk about the other elephant in the room here, what you keep hearing in Hartford in this bill. Sometimes, John, I think the messaging makes it sound more like almost kind of a reparations bill than a bill concentrating on putting something into the community that could maybe have negative effects. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we are familiar with what's gone on the West Coast in Colorado, for example, where they have had provisions in their legislation to allow minority businesses to operate cannabis shops, right? Whether it's through grants or incentives or zoning changes or whatever has to take place to allow for that to happen as a way to kind of right the wrong, if you will, of previous laws. Because it was an enforcement concern for so long in terms of how local police oftentimes crack down on this, especially minority communities. And sometimes judges were very enforcing in terms of the additional sentence time, too. So there are ways of doing this. You can be very innovative on this beyond just expunging, which obviously they're doing in New York, but also incentivizing businesses that are minority owned, for example.
The other question I see John raised is, okay, let's say that there is a framework here. I guess they're talking about an equity committee of such to set up the initial licensing for some minority area businesses. The other question I see, John, from some people is, okay, the paperwork is great. Anybody can do that, background checks and all this. What about the capital? What about the funding? I mean, this commercial grade, professionally grown marijuana is going to have to be purchased from some wholesalers. I'm wondering how that shakes out as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing that the states are trying to learn in the process of all this, is that, you know, even if you assume that these bills will pass in form of it, let's say this summer, it still takes well over a year for everything to come online. And so the regulations, the administrative code, the agencies that are involved in this, it's going to take a while. It's not going to just happen overnight.
Because, John, finally, because this is a sea change in how society conducts itself, do you foresee here in Connecticut, knowing how the wheels move at the Capitol and locally in our 169 cities and towns, do you see any immediate or long-term political washout from this? Or is this just going to get put into the system in a couple of years and whatever, life goes on? Yes or no? What do you think?
No, I don't think it's going to have that big of an effect. My biggest concern overall, as I was emphasizing the op-ed, is, yeah, we are late here in doing this. And really, how effective are we going to be at something like this when we're this late in it? And, you know, what are the far-reaching effects of it, too? And so the competition's on, and I would hope that the lawmakers would not only take this seriously, but recognize the competition as well. well and making certain that we are ahead of the game. I fear that we won't be, and we rarely are in something like this anyway.
Why do you think, though, final question, John, why do you think we wouldn't be? What can you see here as the biggest reason that this doesn't happen? What could we point back to in a few months and say that scuttled it?
I think a part of it is that there's still internal divisions in both caucuses. You know, there's an assumption out there that all these Democrats are all on board with it. Not as many as I think people see or recognize. And I'm not saying the lawmakers. I'm even saying the local officials, you know, especially in some urban areas. There are genuine concerns out there as to whether this is going to be effective or not or even enforceable. And so the questions still remain. For the most part, we know that the Republican caucus, especially among the state lawmakers, are against it. But not all, again. I see more of a generational gap than anything else, and that comes across in the polls. Younger people seem to be more favorable of it. It's more your long-term entrenched lawmakers of both parties who aren't quite on board with it. That's kind of interesting to me.
Dr. Jonathan Wharton, Associate Dean of the School of Graduate and Professional Studies, teaches poli-sci at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. John, thank you. We appreciate it, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
A lot of testing, so it's a real number, 42,000 tests in the day. A 2.4% positivity, that's the lowest one day in some time, in a few weeks, but don't put too much on a one-day average. Hospitalizations plus one. I like to see that stabilizing. Fatalities five. Where were we a year ago? It's worth remembering that exactly a year ago, April 8th, in the second month of COVID back then, we probably had an infection rate north of 30%. It was tough to calibrate because we weren't doing nearly as much testing, 30%. Back then, we knew exactly. We had 1,400 COVID-related hospitalizations 1 year ago. And that went up to 2,000 over the course of the next two and a half weeks. We had 58 fatalities 1 year ago on that day. We had five yesterday. And that 58 went up to about 200 when it peaked. So I think what I see these numbers is hopefully things are stabilizing and we're making a difference thanks to the vaccinations. But we've got to be really careful. And different towns have different situations. I think you can see here the COVID hotspots. It's sort of the valley, those towns in yellow. Waterbury with 69 cases per 100,000. So what are we doing about that? A, we're bringing the vans to Waterbury. Remember back when Danbury was hit hard, we did extra testing. Now we're really bringing in the vaccination vans, making this an incredible priority right up and down through the valley to make sure people get vaccinated, make sure that people are reminded how important it is that you wear the mask. I'm not quite sure why this is happening, but we are paying particularly close attention to it. And I also pay attention because, look around the rest of the country. We're stabilizing here in Connecticut. I think we're stabilizing in New York and New Jersey. I see the Midwest. I see Michigan. I see there's still some flare-ups. And when you look at a place like Michigan, you really focus on Detroit. That's where the flare-up is, an urban community where people are much less likely to get vaccinated. And we're not going to let that happen in Connecticut. We're going to make sure that everybody gets vaccinated. And everybody, we make it easier for you to get vaccinated, and then you got to make it easier on yourself and go get vaccinated. So that gives you an idea of what we're doing in Waterbury, where you see the hot spots here. Same thing happened in 1918. You know, things stabilized after the second wave. And then in 1919, 1920, you had some flare-ups in those particular communities where people let their guard down, and let's not let that happen in Connecticut. Here's the vaccine update. 49% of all adults over the age of 16 have received their first dose. 49% of just a dozen or so more of you had gotten vaccinated yesterday, I'd be able to say over 50%, but 49% is pretty good. Obviously, big majority of the folks over 45 have gotten vaccinated. You know, that makes a difference. I would like to focus a bit on the younger demographic, 16 to 44. We're doing well there, 23%, up about 8% or so since last time. We'll talk about the younger demographic in just a minute. because it's really important. Compared to where we were a year ago, today is sort of the polar opposite in this sense. A year ago, we were terrified of the seniors. They're the ones suffering the greatest risk. They're the ones, the nursing homes beyond. That's where the fatalities were. And that's where we had to really maintain our social distancing and quarantine. Today, the vast majority of our seniors have been vaccinated. They're in a much safer position, and they are able to enjoy themselves with caution, wearing the mask a lot more than they were before. And you're able to say hi to your grandpa, provided you've been vaccinated. And they're the greatest, unlike a year ago, the greatest vaccination, the greatest infection risk is in the age group 20 to 29. And that's a group I'm going to focus on. Get vaccinated. We still have the vaccines, although we have been hit by Johnson & Johnson. I think you probably know they had a problem in one of their manufacturing facilities. We maintained our dosage of Moderna and Pfizer and J&J this week, which is great. Next week, you're going to have a lot fewer J&J vaccines. I think it's 6,000 going down to probably, I think it's 20,000 going down to 6,000 the week thereafter. So if you got a chance to get vaccinated, don't worry about the brand. Just get the option. So anyway, here are my two friends I wanted to introduce to you. One is our great friend, Senator Will Haskell, and Ed Ford. Ed's from Middletown. Two of those young, invincible 20-somethings. And I'm just wanted them to have a chance to say why they got vaccinated. They got vaccinated publicly. Pretty buff there, Will, looking good. Put that right up on their social media so we could remind their friends and their friends could say why this was so important to do and what a difference it makes. Will Haskell, you're right there. Why don't you kick it off for us?
Sure. Well, Governor, thanks so much for having me on. Of course, thank you for your leadership throughout this pandemic. I'm here because exactly like you said, a lot of young people tend to feel invincible or immune to COVID-19. And we know that sometimes students procrastinate. I can be guilty of that. They might not feel an urgency in terms of getting their appointment. But we also know that this virus, it uses young bodies. Even if we don't get sick ourselves, COVID-19, it travels through us to reach our more vulnerable family members, our parents, our grandparents. It reaches the students and the teachers in our classroom who maybe can't get vaccinated due to an underlying condition. So I'm here to just say that to all the young people in this state, your decision as to whether or not you get vaccinated and also when you get vaccinated, it impacts all of us in this community. It impacts all of us in this state. You can do your civic duty by visiting ct.gov/COVID vaccine. Make sure you've got a plan to get vaccinated when the clinics arrive on your college campus or in your school district. And please, please don't stop there. Doing your public duty, it requires going a little bit further. Text your friends, post on Instagram or TikTok if you're cooler than I am and know how to do that. Our generation desperately wants to return to normal life, but the only way that that can happen is if we all do our part. I got vaccinated alongside a handful of really inspiring young people at Stanford Hospital. It couldn't have been more efficient or easier, and I hope that everybody else decides to do the same, and I hope that they do so right away. Thanks, Governor.
Hey, Will, thank you. Really well said. Will mentioned college campuses. Over next couple of weeks, we're going to make a big effort. We're going to get our mobile vans out to the college campuses to make sure they are all able to get vaccinated. With that, let me introduce Ed Ford. Ed Ford from Middletown, councilman there. It's worth noting that Ed got COVID, and it hit pretty hard. So I don't think it was tough to convince him to get vaccinated, but I really, Ed, love to hear your story, and how do we convince all your friends to get vaccinated?
Certainly. Thank you, Governor, for having me on today. This COVID-19 pandemic has hit us all, and we see the facts. We see the data now. We know that young people, our demographic, we are very at risk to this virus. And so what we need to do is do our part and play our role, and we need to get vaccinated. I experienced COVID-19 myself firsthand. I had a fever of 103 degrees. I lost my taste and smell for 3 weeks. It was not fun. So it was definitely a point for me to go get vaccinated. I got my vaccine 2 days ago, and today I feel great. I feel better than ever. And I'm encouraging our generation who may be having some skepticism, who may, you know, be looking at social media and find misinformation, whether it's on Twitter or Instagram. But I'm encouraging, as Senator Haskell said, for those of us who go and get our shots, for those of us who are experiencing the vaccine, to post and spread the word that the vaccine is good for us. The vaccine is helpful for us to get back to normalcy and a normal life here in Connecticut. Governor, you've been doing a great job leading the pandemic. And so encouraging our young people, I think, is the right way to go at this time. So thank you for focusing on the younger demographic today. Young people, go get your vaccines.
Hey, Ed, thank you. Really well said. I'm afraid Will and Ed have got to head off to other things, but you're right. We're trying to do everything we can to encourage young people. I appreciate you being here. I notice, you know, in China, they hand out free ice cream cones to everybody that now gets vaccinated. They're having a hard time there. I noticed Krispy Kreme is now providing you a free donut if you get vaccinated. You know, we'd like to get bars and nightclubs open. Maybe a few more young people get vaccinated. We'll feel a lot more confident heading that direction as well. So do what you can, because it makes an enormous difference. And finally, I'll end where we started. We're doing our best to get the vaccine to you and make it easier for folks to get vaccinated. These are one of our 35 vans. They're getting around now everywhere. I was out in Norwich. People lined up, just walk right up, get the vaccine. Really easy to do. There I was in North Hartford with Mayor Luke Bronin. People just started seeing the van coming around. We gave some telephone calls. People lined up, and people are getting vaccinated. Our rates are getting lower. We're getting things under control. Hang tough a little bit longer. We're going to get there. With that, Paul and Josh are here. Any questions?
News 8. Unmute.
One of the things, Governor, that we're seeing, at least nationally, is a lot of the younger people, and you've talked about that, a lot of younger people now. So what is it, the mobile units? What is it, a combination of things now moving forward to try to get as many of the younger people vaccinated as possible?
Well, I think you heard from, you know, Ed and Will, a lot of it is just a little bit of peer support. Go get vaccinated, get out there on social media, tell people you did it, tell them why you did it, talk about the experience, tell them to tell their friends. You know, I'm probably a little old to be the role model there, but, and if you love your parents and your grandparents, you want to be able to see them, you got to be able to see them safely, and you're still infectious. So I'd like to think that every day more and more of our young people will be getting vaccinated.
It seems like in a lot of different ways, you've been very creative in trying to entice and inform and so on and so forth. Is there something along these lines, too, with a lot of these young people that maybe you can do, again, to try and entice them and get creative at it? Or do you feel that you've pretty much done what you can, and really it's up to them to take it seriously enough and get it done?
Hey, tell your TV audience, we're looking for ideas. The first, the 1,000th young person that gets vaccinated will have a place in your TV show. I don't know. Let's figure out how we get people all the incentives we need to do it. We're going to have the vaccines. We've got the capacity. Now it's a question of you stepping up, getting vaccinated, and getting your friends vaccinated.
NBC Connecticut.
And good afternoon, Governor Matt Austin with NBC Connecticut. I mean, when people do see the stats still, the daily case number is about 1,000 or so, you know, is the state still doing a full contact tracing with all those cases to try to figure out, you know, exactly where are those spots where we're still having, you know, a lot of spread?
We are doing contact tracing. It's easier when you have, you know, fewer infections. Josh, you want to speak to that?
No, that's right. We're still contact tracing every positive case. And making sure they and their contacts are taking the appropriate actions to quarantine and isolate as needed.
And I know you were talking about the potential kind of supply outstripping demand later this month, but I was on VAMS and it looks like there's already, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of appointments for later this month. So potentially have we already reached that point where there is more supply than demand?
Josh, what are you saying? Same thing?
I think the key thing is what you just said, later this month. And that's what we had been expecting for a while now, and I think we're starting to see evidence of that. You know, as providers have put more appointment slots online over the last several days, they're still getting grabbed up quickly in the coming weeks and days, or maybe a little less quickly than they were a week ago. That's to be expected, right? We're vaccinating, 40, 50,000 people a day right now. And so we're working our way through that backlog as we had hoped to. But certainly, if you've been holding out, if you've been waiting, you didn't want to wait online or hit refresh 1,000 times, this is a good time to get back into the system. You can call 211 and get an appointment on the phone right now. Or as you said, you can go on many of the provider sites or VAMs right now and get appointments locked in for the next week or two as there are opportunities available.
And finally, Governor, I know you were talking about the hospitalization rate right now is much lower, thankfully, than it was a year ago. But when people see that and say, oh, if people are getting COVID, they're not having the serious implications and complications that they did before, maybe they're going to let their guard down a little bit. How do you get people to continue to follow the guidance if maybe the most serious complications are not there?
Well, these are, young people, and these are young people who are the ones more likely to be going to the hospitals now. And you heard Ed say he was hit, and he was hit really hard. So nobody is immune, let me tell you. The only thing that makes you immune is when you get the vaccination. And so I think that message has got to be repeated over and over again. The only way to keep yourself safe, and you can get hit and hit hard as a young person, is to get vaccinated.
Okay, thank you.
Fox 61.
Hi, Governor. Zania Maldonado, Fox 61. Earlier this week, you talked about the main goal right now for the Connecticut population is 60%, to get 60% of our residents vaccinated. How are we with that? And will this Johnson & Johnson backup, I know you mentioned there might be a couple fewer appointments next week, is that going to have any effect on that, or are we still good to go with the 60% prediction?
I think we're still good to go. Look, the J&J is especially handy for the mobile vans where people are just doing walk-up because it's a one-shot. And so we're going to have to be a little clever now with that because it's going to have a two-shot regimen with the Pfizer and Moderna. But I think overall our broad numbers are getting there. If the young people continue to get vaccinated, we'll get to that 60% pretty good. We're at 50% now.
And then also the COVID-19 hotspot, a map that you guys put up, very interesting. It does seem to be like a couple of clustered areas that are having higher population cases. But then there's also some outliers like Torrington, for example. Do we have any reasoning as to why these areas are seeing a little bit of an influx in cases?
Well, Josh pointed out that's Union there in the northeast corner, and you say, hey, that's an outlier. What's going on? Let's say they have 6 infections and 800 people. So sometimes the numbers can be a little deceiving. I think what you see is there is sort of a regional impact here, as you see up and down the Naugatuck Valley from Waterbury down. And you see a bit of a regional effect in the United States in terms of the upper Midwest right now. It started out in Michigan, and you see a little bit going on in Europe, mainland Europe. So there are regional impacts to this.
News 12, Connecticut.
Hi, Governor. Just one question for you today. I'll go easy on you today. The state's two big business groups, NFIB and CBIA, both want you to commit to spending some of this American Rescue Plan money on replenishing the state's unemployment trust fund. The businesses are worried that if it's empty, the state still owes the federal government, that they're going to get hit with penalties. This is the wrong time to do that. What would you tell the businesses? I mean, would you be willing to commit some of that money to the trust fund?
Look, certainly think about it, John. I'm working with our delegation saying I think one of the great things the federal government could do that would be bipartisan support, I believe, is if you turned a lot of those loans to all 50 governments, state governments, into a grant. Because you've got 50 governments, all of whom had to borrow at the end of the day because the unemployment rate kicked up so badly 8 months ago. And that means all of us are going to have to raise the unemployment trust tax rate in order to pay off that surcharge. If they turned that into a grant, that would be incredibly beneficial for 50 states and be a tax cut for small businesses across the country. If I can't convince anybody of the importance and power of doing that, then you're right. Then we'll look at some of our other funding and see perhaps if we should put some of that into the trust fund just to mitigate the possibility that we'd have to raise those rates over time to make up for the shortfall.
First, though, this coming Saturday, noon to 1, there's going to be a rally by some concerned folks, and we've been following this issue, and I'm proud to say I saw this pop up in some of the political stuff, some of the deep dive stuff I read every day. I saw this last year, and I said, The fact that some of the majority Democrats in Hartford want to now bigfoot some zoning regulations, particularly in Fairfield County. And as, look, you've had a major American, mayor in this state, Justin Elliker in New Haven, say, well, you folks in Fairfield County are racist, and, you know, it's reflected in your zoning regs. Well, a lot of people don't feel that way. They're upset. They're angry. Alexis Harrison joins us. She's helping to organize something coming up this weekend. Alexis, hi. It's good to hear you again. It's Paul. How are you?
Hey, good evening. Good afternoon, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. And Alexis, I know you've been vocal in this. And I remember reading, you know, about this like a year and a half ago. I said, well, here we go with this one. As a resident of Fairfield County, and I know you know plenty of people down there, I know, Alexis, if it was me, it would frost me off to no end just having a major mayor in this city call my area of the state and my hometown racist. I'm still beside myself.
Oh, I know. Very troubling that has to enter the dialogue. It was baseless. It was founded on nothing. And, you know, I guess it was a good strategy and it got him some headlines. I don't know. I don't think it makes him or New Haven look very good.
So on the weekend now, you have something coming up, what, Saturday from noon to 1. Talk about that.
Exactly. And then just to back up, this isn't a Fairfield County issue. I mean, these zoning laws affect everybody, all 169 towns and cities in Connecticut. And, over the years, I've been, you know, a land activist. I've had a dozen of TPZ meetings. And I just know how important these local commissions are to our community. And having a blanket statewide takeover of these laws is unacceptable to me. Which is why, several folks and I have banded together. We have formed CT169strong.org. So we're rallying this weekend in Fairfield, as you mentioned, from 12 to 1 at the Town Hall Green, because we want to say this is unacceptable and a one-size-fits-all plan doesn't work for Connecticut. And this should be troubling to most people.
Now, I know, Alexis, there have been some bills voted out of committee. Some of these bills, and I've talked to some of the legislators from the area, they've been kind of tuned back, detuned, neutered a bit. But some of these more questionable things may show up in other bills. What are you hearing? What sense do you get on all this? And I would imagine, we know the Republicans are against it, but I would imagine, Alexis, there might be some Democrats a little queasy about this, too.
I think they should be. It's kind of interesting that they go up to Hartford, the state representatives, to represent their unique town and district, yet they want to have a blanket, mandates on zoning. Some of the zoning bills did get out of committee a few weeks ago, but we have to remember there's still an opportunity for that language to go back in. And Sarah Bronin, who founded Desegregate Connecticut, who's kind of part of this this plan to take over our zoning, has said that much, that she expects all this language to go back. And she's really been this big proponent who's driving this big change.
Okay, I have a question, both rhetorical and real, Alexis. Why did we never hear about this, or at least to this level? You know, Dan Malloy was governor for 8 years, and we didn't hear boo about this. Now, all of a sudden, what happened?
Well, I mean, from what I've read and seen, I think Ms. Bronin and others have kind of drew this line from, the tragic George Floyd murder and have made this connection to zoning and exclusionary zoning, which we know has been illegal for many, many years. And their idea is to promote, more density in the towns, which to me would actually citify the suburbs and kind of depopulate the city. So I find this is a very bad thing for Connecticut. We should be really investing in our cities. The suburbs are successful. We've seen that. We really need to make these cities more attractive and just allow more dense housing in suburbs like Fairfield. I don't see how that would work.
And allow me to say something. This is me saying it, Alexis, not you. I'm absolving you of this, but I'm sorry. Okay. The tragic death of George Floyd, I'm sorry. However horrible that is, and that's being, you know, played out in court right now, I'm sorry. That has nothing to do, nothing, less than zero, with zoning laws in Fairfield County. And Alexis, it's that kind of stuff that just really upsets me. You talk about capitalizing on a tragedy for cheap political gain. I said that, not you. So you're okay.
No, and you know, And I also, no one has ever explained in detail how these bills actually, you know, quote unquote, desegregate Connecticut. I think we should be empowering people to buy homes. We should, you know, maybe have lending institutions, you know, make some reforms because they are the primary vehicle by which people can afford to buy a house. Start reforming those practices. You know, renting won't create generational wealth. I don't see how that helps disadvantaged people. And we have to remember, this isn't affordable housing. These are full market value apartments that they would, you know, in theory build. And we know how expensive, you know, real estate is in Fairfield County.
And that's the point.
Probably average $2,000.
Is it that high? I heard in the upper teens. So, I mean, listen, Alexis, you know, there are laws in place. And if somebody goes to some person of color, an attractive area, a Fairfield or Greenwich or Stanford, and they have the money, they're going to be able to buy something. I mean, you're right. This is an economics issue. It really is.
Right. And I think what was troubling to me, too, is that we can't really – the legislator is doing this rather quickly. You know, 830G is the affordable housing law in our state regs, and it took a year of a Blue Ribbon Commission to come up with that law. I don't know why this needs to be rammed through without much, you know, research and dissection and conversation with all the stakeholders. I don't see how that will be good for our state.
You know, Alexis,
I think we need to slow down.
I was talking to someone on another issue earlier this week, and I kind of put that question to them on their issue, not the housing issue, another one. And I said, why now? You know what their thought was? It's kind of interesting. We've been doing everything remotely over the past year and a half. So the notion of 200-400 people showing up to Hartford and staring down legislators in the face, mm-hmm. even if they're not allowed to speak, but just being there, I think they're taking advantage of the situation. I really do.
No, absolutely. It's been a great strategy. These hearings have taken place over a course of 24 hours, which is ridiculous. How can someone, an average person, stay up until 2, 4 o'clock in the morning and wait for their name to be called? How is that good for citizen activism? Hearings should take place 9 to 4 over a course of 2 to 3 weeks. Let people talk. Let hear all the pros and cons mm-hmm. to this.
And if they really wanted to do it, Alexis, they could have done it outside, or they could have gotten a large high school gym or a hall with spaced out seating and good ventilation. They could have done that if they wanted to, right?
Or they don't. You know, there is no immediate rush, Paul. We don't need to do this today. People are getting back to work. They're getting, you know, their kids back to school. There is no rush to pass these zoning changes right now. And again, these don't just affect Fairfield County. They affect all of our state. And that's land. And when you do something that changes land, that's scary. That should take a lot of time because that's a very scarce resource.
Okay, so that's going to be this Saturday. The website, ct169strong.org. And again, Alexis, right. Give us the particulars on the rally.
Yes, yeah, appreciate it. It's from 12 to 1. It's in the green of the Old Town Hall, 611 Old Post Road in Fairfield. And again, go to CT169 Strong. We have lots of information, data on all these bills, so please take a look.
All right, Alexis, thank you. Good to speak with
appreciate
you. We'll
it,
talk
Paul.
Down the line. Thanks,
right.
Alexis Harrison there. Yep.